662 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cow Chronology episode, and today I'm going to be kicking off a new series called Arcanum. I'm not sure how it ties into Witchblade just yet, but I know that it does. It's mainly done by Brandon Peterson. It seems a bit 90s. There were 8 issues in total, but there was also one of those Wizard special half issues, which is what I'm going to be covering here. And just real quick before I get started, for any new listeners we have, a quick description of what the Top Cow Chronology is. So my favorite comic artist of all time is Michael Turner, and I always wanted to read his early work on Witchblade, and I bought a Witchblade omnibus that was, I don't know, like the first 80 issues. It was huge, and I got it at a Borders, actually, when it was like going out of business, so it was already a discount. Plus, I had a gift card that was like double on a particular day or whatever. So long story short, it was like this $60 omnibus that I got for like 12 bucks. So I really couldn't beat that. And then I never got around to reading it. Just like sat on my shelf and sat on my shelf for a really long time. And then I finally became a huge fan of Top Cow for a lot of their other books, a lot of the stuff Matt Hawkins has done, the Edenverse, Think Tank, all that. And so getting to know those guys over there, I thought, you know, I really need to go back and read that Artifact Corner of the Top Cow universe, because I never have. And it's got early Michael Turner work and early Mark, or not early, but it's got Mark Silvestri work, and I've never read it. And, you know, I know Ron Mars did a lot of it as far as the writing. So I started looking online for a reading order, like, okay, where do I start? And I came across this reading order on the Comic Vine website from a user that goes by the name of Condor. And we thank him for his hard work in putting together this reading order, because what it is, it's not a reading order in the sense that it gives you the order of how everything's published and you can read it in that order, but it's more of a chronological order. So the oldest books in the chronology took place the furthest back in the past. So I think some of the first issues are in ancient Egypt, and it moves forward through time to modern day. So that's the chronology that we use. There's a link in the show notes to go and check it out. You can see all the books we've covered so far. You can see what's coming up in the future, and it gives you a chance if you want to kind of read along, read the books before we do, you'll have that opportunity. Now, being that a lot of this stuff is 90s, it's not terribly expensive if you can find it. You know, if you look on eBay to find some of the stuff, then you're paying for shipping, so that always adds to the cost. So I always encourage people to try to find it when you're digging through like dollar bins at a convention, or 50-cent bins, 25-cent bins, whatever you have, you know, the discount bins at shows. The other way you can pick up a lot of this stuff, especially some of the more mainstream titles, like the Witchblade titles, the Darkness, things like that, is to pay attention to when Top Cow does their humble bundles, which they do every so often. They'll do a humble bundle, and you can get a lot of this stuff digitally for a very, very low price. It's pretty much the cheapest you're ever going to find any comics. And Top Cow is not the only publisher that does those type of bundles. There are other publishers that do humble bundles from time to time, and it's for a good cause. And usually there's 3 or 4 charities that you can choose from that the publisher is trying to kind of raise money for. And if you don't like any of those, you can always choose to donate to yourself. But you pay what you want, but based on the amount that you pay, sometimes there will be tiers that open up more levels to give you more content. So those are the best ways to pick up this stuff on the cheap. As I said, a lot of it's 90s, at least so far, so it's not particularly expensive, but you may have a hard time tracking it down. You know, there was such a glut of stuff in the 90s. Honestly, there's a lot of this stuff that's probably sitting in warehouses or back rooms of comic shops somewhere, or it's just been kind of thrown away, so to speak. So that probably doesn't hold true for the first issue of the Arcanum series, the book I'm going to talk about tonight, because as I said, it was a Wizard half issue. So it was one of those giveaways from Wizard magazine. You may have either had to send in for it, or I think that's usually how they did it. There was like this insert in the middle of the Wizard Comics magazine that you would pull out and you'd send away for this. So that's where this Wizard Arcanum half issue comes from. As I said, produced by Top Cow and the creative team, it's story and pencils by Brandon Peterson. We have inks by Joe Weems. We have ink assistants, Marco Galli and Livesay. We have colors by Richard Eisenov and letters by Dennis Heisler. So the issue starts off and we see somebody's being chased through an alleyway. There's a lot of dialogue boxes here. We're in Santa Monica, California, which I think is where Top Cow was located at the time. And these dialogue boxes from Peterson are talking about the balance, about how life is a game of balance. And he goes through and lists different things, water and air, fire and earth, how all men fight to find balance. You have heaven and hell, you have sinner and saint, the haves and the have-nots, rich and the poor. So he's setting out all these dichotomous ideas. And in the background, or set against this this dialogue, are some scenes that are little snippets. And it's hard to tell what's going on. You've got a foot splashing in a puddle. You've got a close-up that just has like an eye and a mouth of like a rock-like creature. You have someone's back who's wearing a hat and seems to have long hair. Another close-up shot of someone's face, a blonde male character who looks, you know, traditionally superheroic with a square jaw. You've got a hand clutching a sword. You've got another close-up of a female, mouth open, kind of yelling. You can just see an eye and an ear. And then what looks to be a picture of the face of the guy that we saw at the top of the page, where we just saw the hat and his back and the long hair. And now we see the front of him, his face sort of in shadow, covered by the brim of the hat, seems much older. We've got another character, his fist outstretched toward us, looks like he's flying. And as we turn the page, it's a double page spread, and we see the characters kind of come into focus here as, again, double page spread, and there are four characters chasing this guy in his hat, long hair flowing. He has a short sword in his hand. Chasing him are this rock-like being. He almost looks like Clayface from Batman the Animated Series, just this huge rock-like creature. We have a female warrior-looking woman chasing him carrying a sword, another male character in some sort of armor chasing him, and then a character flying through the air chasing as well. And we get a few names, but the characters that are chasing the guy in the hat, they're all calling each other by their given names. So we have Louise, we have Ramat, we have Georgie, and Marie. And we don't know the name of the guy that's being chased. But as they enter the mouth of the alley, the rock-like creature says, "You know what? I'm sick of this." And he says, "I'm going to go Voltron on you." And he launches off his fist. His rocky fist breaks off his arm and launches through the air, hits the wall above where this guy's running, crumbles on top of him, and traps him, basically. And one of the pursuer says, "Dig him out. We need him alive." So again, it's a half issue. It's kind of the origin story. Maybe the first time a lot of these characters are being seen by the readers. So it is very dialogue heavy because there's tons of exposition. We learn that the guy in the hat who's been running is named Hawk. And he's given two choices by the pursuers. First, the pursuer says, and I believe this is Ramat, or perhaps, let me check that one second. Yes, Ramat. And he says, "I despise you because you killed one of our own. You're a bloodthirsty murderer. You butchered a sweet woman, and you took our friend from us. And the only reason that you're not dead is because we need to know where the new avatar is, whatever that means. And you're the only one able to track her. We can track her to the city, but we can't track her down more than that. So we need your help now." And Ramat calls this Hawk character the Avatar of the Hunt and says, "You can track her anywhere, anyone better than anyone. You can tell us where this new avatar is and you can save your life, or you can sit there and die quietly." Then he goes on to say, we're giving you a chance that you never gave Flora life or death. Choose. And Marie, the warrior woman with the sword, says, I can't believe we're giving this guy a chance. We should kill him now. And Luis, the rock-like character who's transformed back to human, says, we need what he knows. And Hawk says, well, I'm at your mercy, Miss Eisenov. So apparently the warrior woman's name is Marie Eisenov, which I always love it when creators use the last names or the full names of other creators. And we know Richard Eisenov did the colors for this, so I think that's pretty cool. And Hawk actually calls her the Avatar of Combat. So it seems like all of these different characters are avatars of certain aspects of magic in a way, I guess. We've seen Avatar of Hunt, Avatar of Combat. And so Hawk goes on to say, you know, if you're the Avatar of Combat, so could you stomach slaughter me like a pig? That's not really combat, right? And Georgie says, you know, Hawk, if you know so much about our natural abilities, you know I will kill you in cold blood, even if she doesn't. So where's the new avatar? And Hawk, who again, he seems more grizzled, he seems more knowledgeable than the rest. He says, you've done worse. So the new avatar is Third Street Promenade, young woman, don't know specifics. I'll know her when I see her. And Luis, again, in his human form rather than his rock form, says, oh, right, so you're going to send us off on a wild goose chase. We come back empty-handed, and you'll be gone. No, I don't think it's going to work like that. And Ramat says, no, I don't intend to leave him here. While we search, Marie's going to stay here and stand guard. And Marie says, okay, I love Flora like a sister, so if Hawk's lying, my honor be damned, I'll kill him. And so the other three take off, Ramat, Luis, and Georgie, and Marie is left to guard Hawk, basically. And as she's guarding him, she's built a fire to stay warm, which kind of an interesting choice. There's all this fire, but yet nobody comes looking for why there's a fire in this alley. Kind of just more kind of 90s, we won't worry about that too much. So anyway, there's some howling that goes on, and Hawk's kind of taunting Marie, saying, you hear that? You can take an animal, domesticate it, place it in this unnatural city, but its true instincts come out every time as we see a full moon, and that's why the dogs are howling. And Marie's telling him to shut up. Your woodsy bull isn't going to work. You act like you're part of some grand scheme and you have some role in the natural order of things, but that was just your excuse because you wanted to kill Flora, whose only crime was to love her family and want to see them one last time. And Hawk kind of turns it around. She says, oh, you want to hear about that? You want me to you want to see me as some inhuman demon, rather, to exercise your guilt, but that's not the way the game is played. And he says, Flora understood. And that just enrages Marine. She says, don't you dare talk about her like that. And he said, no, she knew how natural families really love and support each other. And she looked at you as her second family. She knew she was the avatar of joy. And she brought that joy to everybody that she knew. But she wanted to see her real family. And you all said no. You all said no when she wanted to go see her real family. You didn't support her. So she ended up going on her own with no one there to support her. You know, she had this group of friends that were supposed to help her. And really, you betrayed her when she needed you most. And you can just tell, again, you can tell he's pushing Marie's button. She's getting more and more upset. And he goes on to say, you know, for all your talk of honor, you let her die. Right? Happens all the time. Herds abandon their weak. Predators take him down. She knew she was dead when she left her family in Africa. I saw the look in her eye, and she knew. She understood. There wasn't fear or hate. There was just peace. She knew it was her time. And at that moment, there's a crash that distracts Marie. She heads down the alley a little bit, and it's just some dogs that have knocked over some trash cans. But really, what it is, it's a distraction that Hawk has engineered. And when he turns back around, Hawk is gone. There's a dog in his place holding some kind of purple pendant. And Marie picks it up and says, it's Flora's focus. And it's kind of, seeing that personal artifact, that personal piece of jewelry from Flora, just hits Marie with the loss of her all over again. And she's kind of sitting there on her knees crying. And at that moment, all of a sudden, Marie realizes, wait, these dogs? No. And sure enough, when she goes back to where Hawk had been tied up, there are more dogs there, and they've got the ropes that were used to secure Hawk in their mouth. They basically chewed through them and freed him. So that just enrages Marie all over again, and she screams into the night sky, no, which sets the dogs howling all over again. And we see Hawk actually up above on some buildings, looking down on Marie. He's not gone as far as she might have thought. And he says, I just want to keep playing the game, Marie. And to do that, both sides need to be balanced. So Hawk then opens up some kind of communication, and we see this floating head asking for a report. And apparently this floating head belongs to somebody named Mr. Blake, because Hawk tells him, I'm at the location, Mr. Blake. It's a restaurant. I should have this avatar killed soon. And Mr. Blake doesn't even acknowledge that. He just says, what's all that blasted howling? Because again, Hawk has got all the dogs around there riled up, and they're all howling at the moon. And Hawk's response is, nothing, sir. It's just one of the pack mourning its dead. And that's how this half issue ends. One other cool thing about Hawk, kind of the trench coat he wears, for whatever reason, it has like gorilla heads on the shoulders, I guess to kind of show that he's some kind of like tracker or hunter. And it's like this old school pelt that he's got draped across his shoulders with, it's like literally a gorilla head on the shoulder, keeping him warm. He's got the short sword in his hand, and it's not the best Brandon Peterson art I've ever seen. His art, I think, got much better later on when he started doing some cross-gen work. This is pretty early in his career. It's from December 1997 is the first printing of this comic. So again, I'm not really sure what the comic's about. There is some back matter in here that talks about these characters being avatars of magic. That's where I kind of got the idea. There's a sketchbook in the back that says Arcanum, the avatars of magic, leader of the fight for good, Nasir Ramat, and his fellow avatars in arms, Maria Eisenov, Luis Benitez, Ming Chang, and Georgi Milovich, and their secretive enemy, Matthew Royal. So who Matthew Royal is, I mean, he doesn't show up in this issue, so not sure. And who Mr. Blake is, again, we're also not sure. So it's clearly some kind of a fantasy story by Brandon Peterson, but set in our world. So whether or not these characters are travelers from another world, if they're just like a secret society, if maybe this isn't our world. And it kind of looks like our world based on the trash cans and the alleyways and the buildings and the dogs and such. But it's yet to be determined. So I think where this comic shines the most, again, it's a bit 90s, but the colors by Richard Eisenov are pretty spectacular. I think Richard Eisenov is a really underrated colorist. He doesn't do much American comics work anymore, but I think a lot of you would know his work from the Wolverine Origins series that Paul Jenkins wrote, and I think Andy Cooper did the art for that really great series Origin that finally gave us the origin of Wolverine. Richard did the colors in that, and they're spectacular. So he's definitely has talent. They're pretty primary here, which sort of suits the fantasy setting of the story. It's interesting enough. The dialogue's a little stilted, but again, this is only a half issue. It's only about 12 pages. So we're just getting started, and I'm curious to see where it goes. I always take these 90s Top Cow books with a little bit of a grain of salt. They're a little bit of their time, but it's interesting enough. And what I'm most interested to see is how it ties into to Top Cow. So just looking at the covers of issue one, the art looks like it improved from the first issue. And it doesn't look like it's quite so dialogue heavy. I think that Peterson probably was a little dialogue heavy on that half issue, trying to get people to pick up the regular series, because he probably knew that, you know, a lot of Wizard readers were going to send away for that half issue and check it out. And he wanted to make sure they had something substantial, which is why that half issue is probably so dialogue heavy. I didn't necessarily mind it, because again, it's only 13 pages. So if you want to get a good chunk of story, you're going to have to put in quite a bit of dialogue and exposition. So I'm interested enough, like I said, to see where it goes, and especially how it ties into Witchblade and the overall Artifact universe. I mean, it shows up in this chronology, so I'm assuming it's got to tie in at some point. So we'll have to wait and see. Well, that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. I know it's a little bit of a shorter episode. Again, only a 13-page story to talk about, and we'll cover issue one next time on the Top Cow Chronology Project. So once again, I want to thank everybody for joining. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.